Our first subject today is a heavy one, but an important one to talk about. Suicide takes the lives of nearly 45,000 people in the United States in a typical year. Mental health professionals struggle with how to identify people considering suicide and guide them away from ending their own lives. Compass House in Medford, which uses the Clubhouse model of community mental health care, joins us once a month for a segment called Compass Radio. Clubhouse member Mary C. agreed to be interviewed by Bryce Harding at the house. We'll hear her story first, then talk to people from Compass House and Jackson County Mental Health. Mary was very honest in her account of attempting suicide, so just a warning, some of this may be a little hard to hear.
My grandparents raised me, and I was teased by a lot of kids when I was growing up, when I was in grade school. And then they were always making fun of my clothing that my grandmother was dressing me in. And then when I was 16, well, even before I was 16, about 14, I kept saying I wanted to die. I just wish I was dead. I wish, you know, I just wanted to kill myself. And by the time I was 16, someone stole $3 from me. The $3 wasn't nothing to me. The money itself wasn't anything. It just was what happened that they took the money. And I had just been rejected by another boy a few months before that. It was just enough to put me over the edge. And I took 15 pills. It was my grandmother's pills, her breathing pills. I took 15 of them. And it was like, oh no, what'd you do? So I took 10 more, trying to keep an even count. And I looked in the bottle and there was still a lot left. So I took another 15, made it 40. And there was still enough to get her through until she got paid. So I wanted to make sure she had enough pills to last her. And then I went out and wrote a note. And by the time I finished the note, it was about 11:30, I went to bed. And when I woke up, it was about 1:30, and I hadn't gotten, I felt like I was going to get sick, so I went downstairs and took some Digel to stop myself from vomiting, because I still wanted to die. This was no way to get attention. I meant I wanted to die. And I went back to sleep. I woke up at 4, and I still wasn't dead, so I was like, well, by now I'm not going to die, obviously. So I told her. She had my aunt take me to the hospital. And while the doctor was there with the police, the doctor said to me, well, I bet you don't try that again. I said, you let me out of here and you see if I don't. At that point, they wouldn't let me out until I had counseling prepared for me. But the counseling did no good. And then when I was about 18, I was pregnant, and I called a crisis hotline because I was crying and upset. And I was pregnant, and then they said that, I said that I wanted to do it, you know, commit suicide again. And they said, well, how would you feel if you lived and the baby wouldn't? Ever since then, I couldn't commit suicide. It just stopped me. I still wanted to, but I just couldn't do it. And then it wasn't until I went to jail that I found out that I had PTSD. I had no idea. I just thought that I had depression. And that's when I finally found out that I had mental illness.
So something you said struck me, is that you kept track of how many pills were left so that your grandma wouldn't run out before she got paid. So I think that might be kind of surprising for some folks to hear that in that moment you would still be thinking about how this would affect your grandma. It would be easy, I think, for people to assume that once you've made that choice, you may not be worried about the consequences. Could you maybe try to explain to people why it is that you can be at such a terrible place where you are going to try to kill yourself, but also try to make sure that other people are okay?
I guess it's just one of the things that has happened to me as I've known as I've gotten older is that I care a lot about other people.
One thing you mentioned that I am curious about, you said that you kept saying you wanted to die. Were you saying that to people, and how did they respond?
I was telling my grandmother, and she just was ignoring it, just didn't pay any attention to it.
Do you remember how those conversations went?
It usually was when I was upset about something. I was a very angry child, and I was angry because of, I think, some of the stuff that happened when I was younger. This anger was constantly building up, and I just was, you know, I'd get mad, and I said, you know, I just wish I was dead. I wish I'd die. You know, I just want to kill myself. And she would just kind of blow it off, just knock it off.
We can't know what was going on in other people's heads, but what's the impression you got from your grandma? How did her just telling you to knock it off, like, how did that affect you?
I just felt like she didn't believe me, that I was going to do it, that I wanted to die. You know, they just weren't taking me serious. After some abuse happened when I was 10, and she kept that quiet, didn't want anybody to know about that. That plus, I don't know, it really made me so angry. I was angry. I remember being angry at 5, 6 years old, because I know that when kids are abused, they get angry.
The first abuse you suffered was when you were 3, and then you mentioned that it happened again when you were about 10.
Mm-hmm. When I was 3, some kids had me in a shed, and they were trying to get me to undress. Kids that were a few years older than me. And then that kind of stuff just kept going on. As I got older, it got worse. And then by the time I was, 14, 16, in that area, I started wondering why my parents left me with my mom or grandmother and never came after me. Maybe they didn't love me. So that was always on my mind, too. Although I didn't want to go live with my parents because I knew I had it much better where I lived. It wasn't until, I went to jail and I went to a class that they were having about PTSD, and they were discussing PTSD and stuff, and that's when I found out that I had it. And that's the first sign that I had mental illness.
Could you, kind of in summary, describe for us the contrast between what you were feeling at your worst moment right before you took those pills and where you are today?
Well, I guess when I wanted it, or when I took those pills, I just felt like I hated myself. I really hated myself. That was a big issue. And I think that's probably why I felt like everybody else hated me, because I hated myself so much that how can you feel that somebody else cares about you when you hate yourself so much? And then when I came to Compass House, I was shown love, that, you know, the people there loved me, cared about me, valued what I did, and it just made me feel like, you know, your self-esteem is going up and you feel like you can accomplish things. And when you do things, you get that pat on the back that I so desperately needed. I needed to be recognized.
Since you had been open about your feeling with your grandma and were ignored, what would you advise people who have someone in their life who has expressed those feelings, or maybe they worry about? What piece of advice would you give those people?
Go to a teacher, go to a pastor, go to someone that is going to pay attention to it. Go to a paramedic, a doctor, a counselor, someone that's going to pay attention outside the household, because someone else is going to pay more attention. Sometimes people in the family just get too wrapped up and just blow you off. Whereas if you're getting a hold of other people, maybe they'll take it to a social worker, maybe they'll get help for you.
If there is someone in the family who takes it seriously and listens, what would you tell that person to do if they have been told that maybe their child or another loved one is feeling suicidal and they don't know what to do with that?
They need to get them to a counselor, or better yet, a psychiatrist or psychologist. Mental health. Definitely. Take them to the emergency room. But they definitely need to have some type of follow-up, and don't just take them to the emergency room and say, okay, well, you get them some pills and you're done. Counseling is very important. Also give them a lot of support, caring, love.
That's Mary C. recounting her attempted suicide and the recovery from it with Bryce Harding of Compass House in Medford. This is our Compass Radio segment on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley, joined by Elizabeth Hazelwood, who is the executive director at Compass House in Medford. Always good to have you here. Thanks for coming in again.
Thank you for having me.
This is a really, it's a great chance to understand from a real personal level what somebody has gone through. My reaction to it is very similar, because when I was listening to Bryce asking a follow-up question, the idea of Mary taking 15 pills and thinking, oh, what did I do? And then being concerned about the people she was attempting to leave behind. Is that a fairly common thing in suicidal behavior?
It is. Most of our members that express that they have attempted to commit suicide report that they do it a lot to help the people actually that they love and care about, because they feel like the world is not better when they're here, and it would be better if they weren't. It's not that they don't love and care about the people in their lives. It's that they have such negative feelings about themselves and where they are at that moment that they think the world and the people they care about would be better off without them.
Is there a fair number of people who you've come across in your work in mental health who have attempted suicide at some point?
Yes, a lot. A lot of our members, and when you're dealing with mental illness, a lot of times the feelings of hopelessness are overwhelming, and it doesn't feel like there's a way out.
The sense of hopelessness, then, I mean, does it come from just not seeing a way out of the mental illness, just not seeing a way to better things? All the above, I guess?
All of the above, and feeling like you failed somehow. A lot of times stigma plays a huge role, even in your self-talk. Having a mental illness is a health diagnosis, but our society doesn't see it that way. And so the people that are living with mental illness hear over and over again that they're failing, and it really affects how people perceive themselves. And if we could break through that and start realizing that it is, in fact, just a health diagnosis, and that it is something that can be dealt with and overcome, and work together as a team and make people understand that it is not failing to have a mental health diagnosis. It's living, and that each and every individual is incredibly, incredibly important and needed.
It's just like having a broken leg. It's just a whole lot less obvious. And I was struck by that again with something that Mary C. said there when she said, I found out I had mental illness. It's not like you're really aware of it necessarily when it's happening.
Most people don't get diagnoses until years after they have been experiencing symptoms.
What's the usual? I mean, does it often take some major event like an attempted suicide to force the issue to get a diagnosis?
A lot of times. Some people find out by accident, actually. They're talking to someone and someone says, you know, maybe you should probably go see somebody about this. But when symptoms start slowly and manifest over time, you may not even be aware that it is something that you're dealing with until it becomes glaringly obvious to you or someone that you care about. And then after that, you can look back and be like, oh, I've been living with this for a really long time.
Elizabeth Hazelwood is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director at Compass House in Medford, Southern Oregon Compass House, which is part of our regular ongoing monthly series, Compass Radio. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So it seems like every time we talk about suicide, and let me point out, we have talked about it a few times now, but that's part of the issue, is that people don't like to talk about suicide very much, do they?
No, it's not something that anybody feels comfortable discussing. It's something that a lot of times people don't understand, and they feel like someone is being selfish by making this choice, and so it's much more comfortable to not talk about it.
All right, but every time we have talked about it, we bring out the fact that there is a national hotline that anyone can call at any time of day if they are feeling the urge to commit suicide or just need someone to talk to.
Absolutely.
That is 800-273-8255. If you use the letter buttons on your phone, it's 800-273-TALK, so that should underscore what it's there for. And there's a special line for veterans, were you telling me?
Yes, it's the same number. You just pressed option one, and then you get someone specifically trained with veterans, and that is a veteran themselves.
So veteran suicides are a large part of the picture still, evidently,
yeah,
in the country?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that has become more aware. People are beginning to understand that when people serve our country, a lot of times there's things that go along with that when people come home. And it is a huge, huge problem. So there are things like these lines that you can talk to specifically trained for veterans.
I noticed that in some research for this segment that I guess this is a little surprising to me, that men are about 3.5 times more likely than women to commit suicide.
Yes, there's a lot of research that says that men often don't seek help as readily as women, and I think that definitely plays a role in it.
So here again, and I know we're probably getting to the point of making some of the members of the audience eye roll, but it's really important to say, if you think someone is thinking about committing suicide, there's no danger in asking, is there?
Absolutely not. You should definitely ask the question. If they're already thinking about it, asking the question isn't going to make anybody more likely to commit suicide. And if they're not at that point, asking the question is also not going to put it in their heads. People are either there or they're not.
So then what is a logical set of moves if you think somebody is showing signs of wanting to harm themselves and you ask them and they say, yeah, I have been thinking about this, then what?
Then there are some options. Jackson County Mental Health has a crisis response team. Also, Rogue Regional has a behavioral health unit, and the ER will take people through there. If it is someone that you're not with and you're afraid that there is a chance that they will harm themselves, call 911 and ask for a CIT trained officer. It's a crisis intervention trained officer, and that's an officer that's specially trained to deal with mental health crises.
All right. I bring this up reluctantly, but since we're talking about suicide, there was the issue this week of a 29-year-old man in Medford killed in a car accident by somebody driving the wrong way on the freeway in California, and it turned out to be, from police reports, an attempted suicide by car. So the fact is, when people are thinking about harming themselves, they also can potentially harm other people at the same time.
Absolutely. And it's not, I want to point out that in that moment, it's not that that person is thinking about harming anyone else. They're just thinking about ending their life and aren't seeing past that. And situations like that are heartbreaking and tragic and wish that they didn't happen.
And so it's really just a matter of like trying to get rid of the pain at that moment.
Yes.
All right. So the trick for the rest of us is convincing those people that it's not always going to be pain and there are better things ahead.
Yes. And that there are reasons to live and people love and care about them.
That was a great thing that Mary C. said at the end of her interview, where she talked about just remember that the people who have attempted suicide or are thinking about suicide need a lot of support, caring, love, which is something you provide all the time, I imagine, at Compass House.
Absolutely. And that's something that at the end of the day, we all want to feel. We all want to feel wanted and needed and cared for. And that is so important to us as humans.
Many thanks to Mary C. for agreeing to be interviewed. Many thanks to Bryce Harding for an excellent interview once again, and Elizabeth Hazelwood for coming in to talk about the suicide and how we move ahead. She is the executive director at Southern Oregon Compass House, based in Medford, a clubhouse model of mental health care going on there. Thanks again so much for joining us.
Thank you.